This is Sports 1440. My name is Alan Mitchell. Welcome to the Lowdown. We apologize for the delay getting on the air today. We're in a situation here at our location at West Edmonton Mall. Everything's fine, but we were in a different room. So we begin the day with the unusual and also the sad. I know that most of you will know this anyway, but Bob Cole has passed away. In Canada, the play-by-play man for Hockey Night in Canada is as close as we get to royalty. And Bob Cole was loved everywhere in Canada for the person he was and the broadcaster that he was. His style was unique. He was a lovable character who was as big a fan of hockey as we all are. And when the network tried to retire him, the nation rose up and vanquished the attempt, and I'm not even kidding. His staccato delivery gave us so many memorable moments, including the classic Joe Sakic. I can't even do it justice. It was so brilliant. Bob Cole passed, and we are going to have a lot of people talking about him today, including you, on our text line at 833-401-1440. Steve Lansky will join us specifically at 1 o'clock today to talk about Bob Cole. There are other things to talk about today, and we're going to get to those now. But we remember and we think about Bob Cole, and we certainly will read any comments that you send to us today about Mr. Cole. On today's show, we're going to talk about the Edmonton Oilers. They need to play stronger defensively. They need better goaltending. Where have we heard that before? And we're going to talk about the phrase, oh bleep, a lot when we talk about last night's game against the Los Angeles Kings. The Lowdown is driven by Wolf GMC Buick on the corner of 184th Street and Stony Plain Road. Truck month continues in April. Discounts on remaining 2023 Sierras and Costco member savings on select Buick and GMC SUVs. Visit wolfgmcbuick.com. You can reach us at Twitter, Low Tide and Declan Kruger. You can reach us at sports1440.ca, iHeartRadio, Radio Player Canada, on the radio. Also, Apple and Spotify podcast. We tweet it out on X, and we love you for tuning in and listening to it. Text or call 1-833-401-1440. Here's the lineup today. Andrew Knoll from the LA Times Daily will talk about the Los Angeles Kings' victory at 12:40 today. At 1 o'clock, Steve Lansky will join us to talk about Bob Cole. We'll talk a little bit about the Oilers too, but we really want to focus on Mr. Cole. Steve obviously worked with him for a long time and knows him well or knew him well, and we will ask a lot of questions. You are welcome to send in questions that we would pass along to Steve. Austin Mock from The Athletic will join us to talk about the NFL draft. I looked at his latest mock draft, and he had the Eagles taking a defensive tackle to replace Fletcher Cox, so I really like him, and he had a wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills, and that means, Declan, you really will like that mock draft too, because I know you're all about it.
I'm going to love this. I think Brian Thomas Jr. is right there for the taking at pick number 28. We need him viciously. That wide receiver room is depleted.
I'm very
excited to hear what he has to say. And I also want to apologize. As you touched on right off the top of the show, we were, you know, in a room. We were doing a drill when things started. When we came back on, you know, you have to click a button to flip it back over to our feed.
Yeah.
I thought something was going to happen on this monitor here, and then it was going to prompt me to play a bumper so you would have something to go with. It didn't. I wasn't sure if we were on air, and then you went, so I apologize. I can play an intro bumper now if you would like.
Did we hit the air?
We did hit the air, but I wanted to give you a little bit of oomph, you know, to get going.
It's okay.
I felt bad.
I think with all the things that went on at the beginning of the show, a cold start and a solemn start to the show was the best possible one.
Okay, fair enough. Well, good. I'm glad.
And let's hope we never have that again, because I was like, you know, Connor, who I like personally, was like, okay, we have to go. And I'm like, I'm not that guy. Like, I like my 2 hours. I have pontification, you know, ready.
I turned to Connor and I said, "Yeah, I'm not going." Yeah. And he was like, "Yes, you are." Like, I didn't know it was an official thing. I was like, "Yeah, I'll stay right here." And he hit me with the "No, you will not, sir."
He had to bribe me with a Timbit, and then you took off. You knew where we were going. I had to race down the hallway because I'm like, "Where are we going?" And you're like, "Look, shut up, old man. I'm in a hurry." And I'm like, "What the hell?" It's a bit of a mess. All right. I want to talk about the Edmonton Oilers. And I want to do it by saying that whenever I have a disagreement with people, and I have today, people are going to disagree with my take, I go back and I do something called obleep. And I can't use the real word, so I'm just going to say bleep. But what I do is I say, okay, people are mad at Stuart Skinner. I think you always want your goalie to make more stops. And certainly some of those, and we're going to go over them one by one, some of them were, you know, you'd like to have your goalie stop them. But I always do this exercise because I think it does have value. With all of the goals were scored, five of them, you say, was there an event before the puck went in the net where, outside of the goalie's involvement, as a viewer, as an observer, you say, oh, bleep. And let's run down them, shall we? The first goal against, Evan Bouchard sends an area pass to where Warren Fogel is, but Warren Fogel doesn't recognize that that pass is for him. Defenseman stands up at the blue line, puck's turned over. The shot itself, if you read Daniel Nugent-Bowman's article today, Skinner thought he should have it. He could clear sight of it. You want him to stop that puck. However, if you're going to win the Stanley Cup, Evan Bouchard can't make that area pass, and Warren Fogel, if it happens, has to recognize it. That's just a matter of making sure that you are taking care of the puck. Now, if you have Dominic Hasek or Bernie Parent or Patrick Waugh in net, maybe you don't have to worry about that stuff. Stuart Skinner is a fine goalie. There's nothing wrong with him. Number one goaltender. I know people are mad. I'm going to defend him to the end of the earth. You can't turn the puck over like that. So that's two players, Bouchard and Fogel, that you want to be better, and Skinner for the goal against. Second goal, I think sometimes you just got to give the other man his due. And I can complain that Bouchard wasn't inside his guy. He couldn't tie up the stick. I could complain that the breakouts were too simple from LA. But the fact that Kempe, he deflected the puck into the net at that late moment, hand-eye brilliant, I think you've just got to give the other man his due on the second goal. Third goal, Drew Doughty and Fogel were almost even 200 feet from the net, and Doughty beat him back. Nuge caught him kind of and altered the shot, which may or may not have benefited. And you'd want Skinner to stop that puck, but it was a jailbreak the other way, and there should have been more support. So that's another area that the Oilers need to work on. Kevin Fiala's flutter puck, I don't think Skinner saw it. Now, that's a screen. You want your goalie to stop that too, but those pucks go in. It reminded me very much of Aaron Ward's goal in Game 1 of the 2006 Stanley Cup. Goal against number 5, Cody Ceci pinches in overtime, and it's not a good bet. And then Darnell Nurse just wandered just a little bit, not much. It looked like a set play to me, a brilliant pass, and Kopitar didn't miss. So we're going to talk about the goaltender, Stuart Skinner, but we're also going to talk a lot about what the Edmonton Oilers can do better to help their goaltender. And everybody has to be better. And I want to remind you, it's a 1-1 tie in this series. They're not down 3-0. Sometimes in Edmonton, fans get a little ahead of themselves. Western Canada's funny. Edmonton blames the goalie a lot. Vancouver loves the goalie no matter what. King Richard, Roberto Luongo, it's always the goalie. You know, Demko goes out, it's like, oh my God, it's over. Vancouver loves their goaltenders. If you're a goaltender for the Vancouver Canucks for 5 years and you get to the finals one time, you can open up a restaurant in Gastown and make $1 trillion. Not bad. Calgary, I don't know. They love their goaltenders, but they have a right to. They've had really good goalies over the years. I think Stuart Skinner can help this team win a Stanley Cup. The team has to be better in front of him, and Stuart Skinner also has to be better than we saw last night. The one encouraging thing, if you're a fan of the Edmonton Oilers, you can take away, is that he manned up and owned everything. And from what I saw, there was not a lack of confidence in Stuart Skinner. You need that. He's the de facto number one goaltender. Mike Smith isn't coming back. Jack Campbell, I guess he could come back from Bakersfield, but he let in a pile of goals last night for the Condors in the opener against the Rain as they start their playoffs. So there you are. We can talk about anything today, including the National Football League draft, the coverage issues, taking care of the puck, all of those things. Vegas going up to Cobb. That's where you wanted the Oilers to be today. We talked about it yesterday, 2-0. Against Dallas, going home. Oh, my God. What is it with the Vegas Golden? Are they just going to run five in a row here? I mean, Stanley's. Everything comes up Milhouse for the Vegas Golden Knights. Something worth pondering. Toronto Maple Leafs lose. Canada. Once again, it's the sideshow Bob Rake thing for Canadian NHL teams in the playoffs. You know the meme? We can also talk about the Miami Heat and go. Do you want to talk about it?
Al, I would love to talk about it.
This is the only thing I wasn't looking forward to today.
I'll make this really quick because I know we got to get moving and talk some Edmonton Oilers, but the Miami Heat, this was our NBA Finals. This was our championship. We won a game in Boston. It is now a best of five series, and we have three games at home. Listen, we're not going to win the series. We shot 23. We had a franchise record 23 threes on 55% three-point shooting. And we won, you know, by 10 points, 111-101. It's not sustainable. We're not going to win the series. But to go into Boston, no Terry Rozier, no Jimmy Butler, let Tyler Hero run the offense, gather 14 assists, and win that game. Like, the Celtics are frauds. They should be embarrassed.
Oh,
they were supposed
God.
To win every game this series by 60 points, and they just lost at home. They gave up 23 three-pointers. They could not defend Bam when he had the one left-hand dribble come across the key, pull-up jumper. It was money every time in the fourth quarter. We are rolling. Listen, we're not going to win this series, so I take back what I just said 5 milliseconds ago, but we are rolling. But what a win. This is our championship. I'm going to hang a banner for this one. It feels so good.
You called the Boston Celtics frauds. How can you be our
Listen,
NBA
if,
guy?
I'm telling you, if these guys don't, I said this yesterday on Duncan with Declan, if these guys don't make the conference final, if these guys don't make the NBA finals, excuse me, Joe Mazzulla needs to be gone and they need to do something to rework that team. It would be an embarrassment after a 64-win season on all the wins in the Eastern Conference. I really think they need to win an NBA championship. The problem is, Denver on that other side is looking so good, and Nikola Jokic is so generationally talented. And there are a lot of other deep teams in the West.
But they
need to get there.
Are you saying Mazzulla should be sent to Mazzulla?
He got to be sent somewhere. If it's not Mazzulla, it's South Dakota.
Oh, my.
You know, like, I'm like, seriously, if they don't, something needs to change because there is no reason this team shouldn't be in the NBA Finals and playing in at least a 6-game series when they get there. They just lost to an 8-seed Heat team who lost a play-in game with two of their four best players and with no point guards.
How did you make your voice do that?
It was just excitement and anger and everything.
What are you, Adele?
I wouldn't mind being Adele, but I'm fired up. I'm fired up. It's a great win. I'm so happy. I'll drop it now, though.
People are saying they're blaming you for us being on the air late. All good. I'm blaming Donovan. Always a good idea. Gordile says, Kopitar did not miss. Great shot. Just like Fernando didn't miss. We know how that turned out. It's round one. One game apiece. We're good. Gordile, I agree with all of that. Ben says, I don't think LA can maintain this puck luck, can they? I agree with that, but they won, right? So you've got to acknowledge it. But go ahead.
That kind of
insight is why we pay you the big money.
I had said Edmonton in five. This game makes me think maybe Edmonton in six.
I said six.
But I really do think that LA's play is not sustainable, and these games happen in series when you've played a team 3 years in a row. Skinner needs to make more saves. You can cut down on defensive errors. Warren Fogle's controller died on that. What was that? On the first goal or second goal?
Second goal.
Yeah, his controller died. It happens. I still think Edmonton is far and away the better team. I watched that game, and like I said, the biggest grievance for me, Skinner needs to make more saves. But I don't look at that as an Edmonton Oilers team that played complete garbage hockey for 60 minutes. I look at that as a team in LA who came back from a 7-4 drubbing. Cam Talbot played a lot better. They stood on their head. It's the playoffs. Things are going to get tougher. The intensity is going to ramp up, and they just answered the bell. I still think Edmonton is a far better team. I still like Edmonton in five or six, but these are the playoffs. And after a 7-4 loss, you have to expect a team to come back in that fashion, especially when you've played them 3 years in a row. That's what LA did, and that's why I don't put too much stock into that one loss. Now, it's at home. You never want to give home ice advantage back to the LA Kings, but I don't walk away from that being like LA is the far and away better team in this series. I still think it's Edmonton by a wide margin.
Here's the deal. If the Oilers don't win this series, they don't deserve to win this series. We can talk about refereeing. We can talk about all the things that are important. They have to win. They are the better team. They have the better players. And I believe they will win. But it is in the hands of the hockey gods and the Edmonton Oilers and the Los Angeles Kings. The fact that Kings won that game tells you that the Oilers have work to do. And all the things we talk about and all the things that the new coaching staff has done appear to have reappeared. It's not like Jay Woodcroft is still here, but I do not want to go down the same road where we'd spend all summer talking about the wrong center was out there. The Oilers are too good for that. Let's see what they do in Game 3. I suspect that we'll see a victory for the oil drop in Game 3 in Los Angeles. Okay, we have to take a break because we've got a very busy show. Declan really overbooked us, but I'm glad he did. We've got great guests for you. On the way, it's rumors, and then we're going to have Andrew Knoll from the LA Times Daily. We're going to have Austin Mock from The Athletic about the NFL draft later on, and Steve Lansky at 1 to talk about Mr. Bob Cole. This is The Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440. It's The Lowdown on Sports 1440 for Wolf GMC Buick. Truck month continues in April. It's all at wolfgmcbuick.com. Yeah. Kind of cool today. It's spring, I know, but it felt like fall today. It truly did. I didn't wear a jacket because I never look outside. And I saw last night in my computer, it said warming trend. And so then I for some reason, I thought it meant like right now. But it's kind of fall-like.
It's been feeling like fall lately. Yeah. Like, I walk around every day, and I'm thinking, my goodness, I'm in, like, early October, late September. Like, it's really been the vibe. Like, spring is usually a little bit messy. You know what I mean? It's dirty. Yeah. It's wet. It hasn't been that way this April, and it's felt a lot more like fall. I've really enjoyed it, though. I love fall. It's my favorite season.
I wonder if ducks are pissed off about it, right?
I talk to them. They're doing okay.
Okay. All right. What about the Canada geese? They're just angry.
Oh, they're always mad. Yeah, yeah. They don't stop being mad. They just get more mad.
Time for rumors brought to you by Ewell. Ewell has a brand new e-commerce website. Don't sit on the bench. Get your account today at ewell.ca and win that project. E-W-E-L. Ewell.ca. Okay. There's lots to get to. Lots to get to. We begin with Bob Cole. Mr. Cole passed away. His daughter Megan told CBC News earlier today he was 90 years old. Absolute legend. I remember pre-Bob Cole Hockey Night in Canada, but Bob Cole Hockey Night in Canada cut such a wide swath through all of our lifetimes that he is and was unforgettable. He started in 69, long time ago. And in 96, he was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, and received the Halls Foster Hewitt Memorial Award for broadcasting excellent the same year. And for Canadians, Bob Cole's legend, we know all about him from Newfoundland and Labrador, big-time hockey fan, had a unique staccato delivery. I think we all felt we knew Bob Cole. Somebody who did know him, Steve Lansky, will join us at 1 o'clock today. And my hope is that we talk about his memories of Bob and maybe get a story or two, because on a day like today, and I mentioned at the top of the show that we do have royalty, but we don't really in our day-to-day lives in Canada. But somebody like Bob Cole really does, you know, more than the TV news broadcasters or anybody really. He held a very special place for us as Canadians, and his passing. He lived a good long life, but it is an opportunity to remember all the calls that he made, including Joe Sakic, and it was a monster moment, and it always makes me smile. And I think that he does that. He did that naturally for a lot of people. So we think of him today. The NFL draft is happening, round one tonight. The Rams are looking to go into the top 10. I don't know what the Bills are doing. The Broncos are apparently interested in moving, or other teams are interested in picking up Cortland Sutton. Apparently, Bo Nix is a player of interest. It's a pretty wild time. Declan, you are sort of the expert. I won't say sort of, but I did on this. Where do you see this draft going? We did a mock earlier. People loved it.
It was awesome, man. Do you want to do another one?
Well, I just, they, you know, the we got to give the people what they want.
Yeah. The people being me.
But it felt like you guys had the top four quarterbacks going early on.
Yep. First 11 picks.
Well, I saw offensive tackles going like 7 or 8. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, I think Joe Alt was the first off the board at 7.
Right. So is that what we're going to see tonight?
I think so. Yeah. I think the first 3 picks off the board are going to be quarterback, no questions asked. I think the 4th pick that then falls to the Cardinals, they just gave Kyler Murray a bunch of money. I think Kyler Murray, listen, he's undersized. I don't know if Kyler Murray can win you a Super Bowl, especially with how much money he's demanding, but he's a fine quarterback. You could do a lot worse. They probably look to Marvin Harrison Jr., who in my opinion is the second best player in this draft class. Then you get to San Diego. You get to LA. Connor's rubbing off on me. They have gone from minus 1,500 to minus 1,000 to minus 600 to draft a quarterback in the first round.
Wow.
I would be floored. I would be shocked if they take J.J. McCarthy. Of course, the connection there is Harbaugh was his college coach.
Yeah, but what do you do with your QB?
You don't do it. There's no way. I would be beyond shocked. The only thing I could think of is the cheaper deal, but even then, and get rid of Herbert and just save money.
Why would you get rid of Herbert? There's
no way, right? Like, there's no way. I'm just speaking about what the betting odds are doing.
Do we have, like, somebody watching over Connor? Because if that happens, I worry.
No, I would be floored, but I'm just speaking to what the betting odds suggest. And then as you get past those first 5 picks, you have a couple teams that are set at quarterback and need skill positions. When you look at Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, they need protection. When you look at guys like Joel, Talise Fuaga, etc., defensive edge rushers, Dallas Turner, Jared Verse. And then you get to the Minnesota Vikings at pick 11, and J.J. McCarthy is right there for the taking. J.J. McCarthy, in my estimation, is a far stretch from the first 3 guys who are going to be the first 3 off the board in Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and of course, Caleb Williams. But you could do a lot worse at quarterback. I think he finds a home in the first round, and I think more often than not, it ends up being the Minnesota Vikings with that 11 spot.
Okay. And Eagles, if they take somebody on the line or a cornerback or...
It'll be a corner. There are too many corners to go in the first round for the Eagles not to get one at 22 or wherever they're picking.
Okay, sounds good. I appreciate that. Predators have recalled Juuso Parsonen. I don't expect the Oilers to do any of those sorts of things recall-wise. But if injuries do occur, Philip Broberg practiced with the team the other day, and I wanted to spend a little bit of time in this segment about Dylan Holloway. The day that Dylan Holloway was drafted, I looked at his numbers and I pondered, as one does, the offensive side of his game. You never know with young players. And he filled the net in the AJHL, but when he went to college, he didn't play a lot early, and then he did spike a little bit offensively late in his freshman year, but there wasn't enough to say, this is absolutely a guy that you're going to be able to trust to score goals. And in the AHL and his NHL time so far during his career, it hasn't been clearly obvious that he's going to be able to put the puck in the net. And yet, last night, under a tremendous amount of pressure for everybody, he scores twice. Now, he's played 89 regular season games in the NHL and has scored 9 goals. Last night was his 3rd postseason game, and he's got a couple. What does that tell us? Well, the first thing it tells us, and it is a big deal, is that for the Edmonton Oilers, Dylan Holloway is going to be playing in the top 9 until further notice. I don't know how you take him out. And I know the line he scored on, but if you've got that kind of torque, you need to put it higher up in the batting order. So either he moves up or the Carrick line moves up, one of the two. There's no neutral ground on this. Dylan Holloway scored twice in this series last night. He gave this team a lift. So I don't know, it gets rewarded right away because they're on the road and you got to, you know, button down and play a much more responsible game. But I don't see how you can turn back now on Dylan Holloway. What does that mean in the summer? Well, on left wing, the Edmonton Oilers have Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. They have Evander Kane. They have Warren Fogle, who's playing right side. They have Dylan Holloway. I think that you can start to put together the summertime for the Edmonton Oilers with Dylan Holloway playing top 6 or 9, and that changes the equation. And you're like, come on, Lotan, it was one game. No. No, that's not the way it works. That was a hell of a game. He's been building towards something. The coaching staff didn't know him that well. They put him in the game now, and he's excelling, and he scored twice in a game that they got to overtime. A lot of it was because of him. I don't see them turning back now. He offers too much. There's too much speed. He's a rambunctious player. He's not a shy violet. And he's healthy. We don't know how many of those other cats who play left wing are completely healthy. This is the kind of thing that happens to teams that go a long way, where you all of a sudden, I always use Rajan Houle as an example in 71 because it's so embedded in my brain. I did not cheer for the Montreal Canadiens, but I watched in awe as a player who was not, up until that point, terribly well-known, have a major impact on the success that team had in Montreal Canadiens in 1971, and they ultimately won Stanley Cup. And after the series, John Ferguson, who was on his way to retirement, said, "That kid saved me. I was junk in the playoffs. He saved our line." Veterans don't say that unless it's absolutely 100% true. Dylan Holloway, last night, he announced his presence with authority, in the words of the great Nuke LaLouche. And if you're an Oilers fan, you have to be happy with that. It is a big deal. It doesn't happen to everybody. It is a big deal. Blue Jays have placed Beauden Francis on the injured list. Everybody's hurt. Everybody's hurt. Left-hander Brendan Little has been recalled. I think they're playing today against Kansas City. Yeah, they are. They're playing against Kansas City. It's 2 Cobb for KC in the bottom of the second. They're playing in Kansas City. And then it's getaway day. Every once in a while, a team stays till Thursday and they play a fourth game, and that is the case with them. So now you're updated. All the rumors. There's plenty to go around. Of course, the NFL is going to blow away everything tonight. If you're an NFL fan, I mean, I don't know how much hockey you're going to watch, but it's not the normal amount. It's a big deal. Now, if you're an Oilers fan, you're probably going to, I don't know if you're going to rewatch, but you're going to replay in your mind that game last night. Andrew Knoll, who's hockey reporter for the LA Daily News, is going to join us next. And we're going to parse and go through last night's game and talk a little bit about why the Kings played so well, how they won, and if it's a repeatable game for the LA Kings. Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440. It's the Lowdown on Sports 1440. Brought to you by Wolf GMC Buick. Truck Month continues in April. Check it out, wolfgmcbuick.com. Every once in a while, we have a guest on the show, and I read there because I do a lot of prep. I read just before we go on the air, I read their Twitter bio, or X bio, I guess. And Andrew Knoll, our next guest, who's a hockey reporter for the LA Daily News, formerly the New York Times, has a great little line at the end. The Imelda Marcos of sneakers. I giggled, and I hope that you did too. That's very well done. Andrew Knoll, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
So I have to say that after game one, the Edmonton Oilers looked to me like a team that had really battened down the hatches and done a lot of good things. A little wobble, obviously, because they'd given up some goals, but they were of the fluky variety. But after game two, the Kings, I mean, it felt like they were doing some set plays that worked out. Drew Doughty skating like he was a rookie out there to score a goal. I don't know if they turned back time, but the LA Kings, to me, looked about as impressive as I think they can last night against Edmonton.
Yeah, so that breakaway goal, and I think I posted, what decade is this? Some vintage Doughty get a breakaway there. And I think that was kind of part and parcel to the broader inversion of the narrative from game one to game two. And that in the first game, Edmonton's big guns were really firing. But then we saw the Kings cannons in game two. I mean, Kopitar, tremendous game. Kempe carried it over. He and Jordan Spence are probably two guys that had good games in both outings. But then you had to really their top six, their top pairing. Did an about phase from the first game. I mean, you look at Deneau, he had sort of an in-game recovery and a game-to-game recovery in that he really absorbed a lot of the play, both shorthanded and five-on-five. In the first game, had a very tough night. Second game, much better. Obviously takes that huge hit from Hyman, comes back from that after just a very brief absence. So, that was kind of a microcosm of the Kings' sort of resilience and bounce back. There wasn't a ton of carryover from game to game. And it probably won't be from game two to three either. I mean, that's just kind of been the nature of these series the last 3 years.
You tweeted out or responded to, I can't remember, it was Drop in the Midst. I've just tweeted it out again. Not only did they win the game, they were very physical. And Connor McDavid got his share of shots in and was taken, shots were taken at him as well. Seems to me as though the Kings, I don't know about the verbal game and the you know, the crosstalk or anything like that. But there's certainly, you know, these teams have played a lot over the years in these series. And there's, I don't know, bad blood is it, but there's blood in the water. And both of these teams really want to beat the other guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's mutual respect, but there's also palpable resentment. There's no question about that. And I think in the first game, the Kings did that in a way that was aggressive but not controlled. Especially we saw them take a couple of pretty foolhardy penalties, Dubois getting into it, trying to agitate near the boards, the more, you know, the kind of clipping Desharnais there. Those were not smart plays that didn't help their game. Last night, Hughes hit on McDavid, the little kind of game of hot potato, pushing McDavid between Gavrikov, Kempe, and Kopi, who's, you know, a Lady Bing winner, but not looking like it in this series. I thought that was productive, and I'm sure we'll see plenty of pushback from the Oilers. I mean, their third line was tremendous last night, even though it didn't produce a goal, and they've got some tough customers, and we'll see where it all goes from here.
I felt that going into the series that one of the keys for Los Angeles, because they're just full of really good two-way players, was putting pressure on the defense and recognizing opportunity. And on the first goal of the game, Evan Bouchard sends an area pass to Warren Fogle. It doesn't get out. Is a pinch at the blue line. And then a great shot by Kempe, who had a terrific night. But it shows to me that the Kings are well coached. There's been a lot of scouting about what the Oilers do and who can be taken advantage of. And for me, anyway, it feels good or bad like Evan Bouchard is going to be front and center in this series.
Oh, definitely. And I think the Nurse-CeCe pairing has got to come up the same way that the Roy Gavrikov pairing has to bring up their level of play for the Kings. I think those two pairings on the respective sides have both struggled a little bit in the first couple of games. We saw Nurse with the misplay on the winner yesterday. There's guys that are going to have to come up. And coming into the series, that was a clear edge, I think, for the Kings, was kind of the lower part of their defensive rotation or maybe their defense core in general. And what's amazing is they're playing the series without Brant Clark. He's not up. He's a top prospect for him, a guy who was a difference maker in his limited time during the season. Whereas, you know, the Oilers, I mean, obviously Bouchard had a tremendous year, but then in Ekholm is a guy who's always brought it, especially at playoff time, had that amazing run with Nashville in 17. But then you get below that, and the components aren't quite as reliable. So that's something I think the Kings will look to exploit. And interestingly, they really haven't spent a lot of time in their 1-3-1 neutral zone forecheck series. Yeah. I couldn't put a number on it, but maybe a quarter of the series they've gotten it set up. And they've had a little bit more of a traditional 2-1-2 forecheck. And I think that's worked well for them. I mean, you mentioned that play that should be a heart around the glass. He tries to do like a soft bank pass off the boards, and that just got devoured, came back at him for a goal. So we'll see if that persists, or we see more 1-3-1, or how it develops.
Well, it's like a counter tray, right? Like you, everybody's expecting student body right, and you go left, and it the interception opportunities are right there. And for me, anyway, when I looked at this series, I said, I did. I said the Oilers would have the superior goaltending. I think they did in game one, but in game two, I think it was a Ryan McLeod breakaway. I thought L.A. had the better goaltending in game two. Do you agree?
I would agree with that, but I think it's a good jumping off point to, you know, people may disagree on this one, but I look at Talbot's performance across the season finale, the first two games of this series, and also the way that they deployed him during the season and the way they used their second goaltender, particularly once it was David Rittich and, you know, Copley had the injury. I'm thinking that despite the fact that he made some big momentum swinging saves, of course, he also had a couple that he'd probably like back as far as ones that went in. I would consider starting Rittich in game three. I'm obviously not the coach, thankfully, for the Kings, but he had tremendous, tremendous splits at home. I think he had like a 1.34 goals against at home, save percentage way into the 900s. So, you know, he's been dominant at home. He's the more athletic goalie that could potentially steal you a game. I would be surprised if they went to Rittich slightly, but again, I mean, thankfully to them, I'm not the one making the decision. I would strongly consider the goalie switch, especially because, you know, they when they did ride Talbot a whole bunch of games in a row, that generally lowered the quality of his starts as time went on.
Also, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Rittich, I believe, traditionally plays pretty well against Edmonton.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, he had quite a bit of battles there when he was in Calgary. So yeah. he's seen them plenty, even for a guy who just joined the Kings this year and wasn't part of those prior two series.
Are the Kings, you know, one thing I've noticed, and I haven't watched them a lot since the coaching change, but it does seem to me like in terms of deployment and strategy, this is a fairly innovative coach compared to what the predictable that we knew beforehand. Is that fair?
I would separate those into two categories. In terms of strategy, I don't think they've made any enormous adjustments in terms of their system. We saw some PK adjustments, you know, which is not really Jim Hiller's area. He's really focused on the power play still, even though he's the head coach. And of course, Edmonton countered that. I mean, they have so many wrinkles. But yeah, in terms of strategy, I'm not sure that we've seen tremendous variance. But in terms of personnel, yes. He and DJ Smith, who essentially runs the bench, they brought him as an assistant, have really done a lot more mixing and matching with their lines in game, from game to game. I mean, Todd McClellan had the same lines for a quarter of the season, which is rare. I mean, zero variance. And here, you know, the lineup sheet is just kind of a primer or a suggestion. It really mixes up in between games, even the deep pairings, but certainly the forward line. So in that sense, yeah, we've seen a lot more tinkering, a lot more different looks. Strategy-wise, maybe not a ton of variance.
Do we have any injury updates? Anybody hurt, or is it pretty much, because it was in this game too, same rosters for both sides. Any word on any injuries from the LA side?
It seems like, you know, I checked in this morning with a couple people. You know, seems like nothing doing. Unfortunately, they did not skate today. They took this as a team day off, so there were no official updates or media availability or anything of that nature. But, you know, with Deneau finishing the game last night, there was certainly nothing evident. And, you know, just been kind of making a couple calls this morning. I don't think there's anybody that's a concern for game three.
How many sneakers, sir?
I would have to get an account, but it's under 1,000 now. At one point, it was over 2,000. So I've pared down a little bit. I may lose my title. I may have to edit the bio sometime soon.
I love it. Please call me for the garage sale. I want to be there. Thanks. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Okay. Love it. Andrew Knoll, hockey reporter for the LA Daily News, formerly the New York Times, the Imelda Marcos of sneakers. I got a good chuckle out of that, and I thank him for that and for the interview, the opportunity to tell us a little bit about, you know, the LA Kings side. It's important. Know thy enemy. That's why I keep Declan nice and close. And I know if he's strategizing or doing some strategery over there. How about some Bob Cole soundbite? We're working on that.
Oh, they'll be here. You don't have to worry about that. We're finding the right ones.
Yeah. But also, just so everybody knows, we had a plan, and then we were a little bit derailed. Life got in the way. It's okay. Everything's fine. We're fine. But sometimes that does happen, especially on live radio, because you got nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, as Martha and the Vandellas had said. But I like that you're thinking along with us, and for sure, we should, you know, honor Bob Cole. Steve Lansky will join us at 1 o'clock, and we might talk about the Oilers a little bit, but really what I really want to do in that segment, and I hope that everybody respects it, is to talk about Bob Cole. It's important that we spend time talking about him. It's a very busy sports day, but that comes to the top because of the man he was, the person he was, and what he meant to all of us. This comes from Boreal Bernie, Canadian hockey broadcaster, Mount Rushmore, Foster Hewitt, Bill Hewitt, Danny Gallivan, Dick Irvin, Bob Cole, any others? That's a lot. I would say to you that for this is just my personal my personal list would be a lot different, I think, than most people's list because I'm a little older. But I would have Jim Robson. I would have Rod Phillips. I would have Ed Whalen. there's a lot of great broadcasters. Chris Cuthbert.
He's there for me, I got to say. He made me fall in love with the CFL.
For sure, right? And I think that, you know what you have to do is you kind of have to have them all written down and then decide, because you don't want to leave anybody out. And I know that I have, and I feel guilty for it. I thought Jim Houston was a great play caller. Like, I just felt like he was a great play-by-play guy. And I do think, and I'm just going to say this, and then everybody can get mad or happy or whatever, but I think in Edmonton, we've always had great broadcasters, like TV and radio, just brilliant people. And we have Jack now, but we also have like Cam Moon. Bob calls a great game. We're really lucky. We're really fortunate, I think, national and local. In Canada, the play-by-play job for the NHL Canadian Cities is a cherry position, and for good reason. And the Hockey Night in Canada gigs are as good as it gets. You're basically a rock star in Canada, although Bob Cole would never have fit that bill well. He certainly was a guy who people loved and respected and thought well of. And we're going to talk to Steve Lansky about exactly that, about what he meant and the legend that he was. And, you know, part of it was that he was there for so many great calls, but the other part of it was that he made them. He made them special. He made them memorable. Joe Sakic, I can't even do it. It's so good. And I think that any day would be a good day to celebrate Bob Cole, but today especially, we should do that. So I haven't talked to Steve, but I'm hoping that he agrees with me that we'll maybe have him tomorrow to talk about the Oilers. And today we will just devote it to Bob Cole, because I think that's what he deserves. That's what he meant to Canada. And I know out there people are like shocked. And I mean, 90, he had a wonderful life for sure, but it's still a time to remember and to show respect. LT, in my opinion, the bottom six were better than the top six from the rig. I mean, I'd have to go back and look. I think that there were specific moments that were difficult, and I've given you my opinion. I always push back when people are all over the goaltender only. I think there were other things. The goalie has to be better. The defense has to be better. It's a tough game because LA is built for beating the Edmonton Oilers. So you've got to, it's like playing Calgary back in the 80s, but that's the job, and they got to get to it. Okay. On the way, Steve Lansky. We're going to talk NFL draft as well in hour number two. It's time for an update.
This is a Sports 1440 update.
And for your Sports 1440 update, brought to you by Fountain Tire. Right now at Fountain Tire, being on the road together means getting a great deal on tires. Save up to $200 on select tires, including Goodyear, until June 8th. Financing options are available. As discussed earlier on the Lowdown with Load Tide, sad news out of the hockey world as Bob Cole, the voice of Hockey Night in Canada for more than 50 years, has passed away at the age of 90. Bob called his final game in April of 2019. Two games in the NHL tonight. The Panthers are in Tampa to take on the Lightning. Panthers lead that series 2-0. Puck drop at 5. Then at 5:30, the Hurricanes in New York to take on the Islanders. Carolina as well leading that series 2-0. Three games in the NBA today. Cleveland in Orlando to take on the Magic, where they lead that series 2-0. At 5:30, it is the Knicks in Philadelphia to take on the 76ers. New York leading that series 2-0 as well. And the late game out of the NBA today as Denver heads south to Los Angeles, where they will take on the Los Angeles Lakers. Denver leading that series 2-0. MLB scores around the league. The Pirates up on the Brewers 5-4 in the bottom of the seventh. At the end of the fifth, it is the Guardians up 5-2 on the Red Sox. Middle of the seventh between Chicago and Minnesota sees the Twins leading 3-2. Phillies up big, blanking the Reds 5-0 in the top of the seventh. Astros up 1-0 on the Cubs in the bottom of the second. The Mariners with an early 2-1 lead over the Rangers. And finally, The Toronto Blue Jays in action in Kansas City against the Royals. That one currently at the top of the fourth, for the Royals lead 2-0. Alex Vlasic has agreed to a 6-year deal with the Chicago Blackhawks. And Chris Middleton, with an ankle injury, is uncertain for the Bucks Game 3 tomorrow. I'm Declan Kruger. It is more of the Lowdown with Low Tide coming up next in Hour 2, joined by Steve Lansky and Austin Mock of The Athletic. I'm Declan Kruger. This has been a Sports 1440 update.